This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Pixels, Southpaw, Paper Towns, and then the limited releases of Testament of Youth and A Murder in the Park. I'll also be breezing by the news, go to the trailer park, and talk about my box office predictions as well as the world-famous DVD roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. If you want to reach me on the internet, you can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. That also works for Instagram if you want to check me out. There's a little bit more family stuff going on there, but you can follow my pictures and my idiocy. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. I'm going to pull this back from you a little bit because this is a weirdly light week for news in terms of entertainment. I'm not talking about national or international news. And this is not uncommon in the weeks following something like Comic-Con because the studios dumped all of their potential news and newsworthy stuff right around that time to benefit from the general PR and awareness of Comic-Con. So it's kind of light right now. I mean, there's some remake news, like they're going to remake Logan's Run, or there's a new director attached to something like Stephen King's It, or a director like Ava DuVernay is out of the Black Panther movie and why. The only stuff that really seems to be some TV news, which I really don't cover, or just rumors or just nonsense. Stuff like Matt Smith saying Peter Capaldi reinvented Doctor Who. That's nothing big. I mean, that's him just doing an interview. And what's he going to do in the second season of Peter Capaldi's version of Doctor Who? He's going to trounce him? Or like Sigourney Weaver saying she was disappointed in Alien vs. Predator and talking about the new upcoming Neil Blomkamp Alien movie? Well, of course she was disappointed. She wasn't in it. I don't think it had anything to do with the story as much as she wasn't involved. Because if she was disappointed in movies, the one to really be ashamed of is something like Alien Resurrection, which was terrible. So I'm going to actually take the moment here and pass by the news and talk about a more topical thing and something I used to refer to as Fat Guy Sound Off. I do movie marathons for my kids. It started several years ago when I decided to watch all the James Bond movies with them. And I've since done all the Planet of the Apes movies. We did the Lucasfilm movies, which is Star Wars and Indiana Jones and even stuff like Howard the Duck. I did the Alien and Predator movies. I've done the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This summer, over 4th of July weekend, we said, hey, let's do an 80s marathon. My wife and I picked the slate of movies. There were like 15 movies, and we watched a couple a day, and then we showed them old TV shows. Like, we showed them Facts of Life and Silver Spoons and ALF and Fantasy Island and Three's Company and The Love Boat, just to show them the stuff that was being made in the 80s, because it's actually worthwhile. Because, yeah, it's just entertainment, but it also deals a lot with the culture and the popular culture of the time. And so we decked out the basement in 80s stuff. I put up old tube TVs and got plug-and-play games for those, the Pac-Man, and interestingly, has a lot of relevance to Pixels when I talk about it later. And of course, I take pictures of it and I tweet about it. And I'm not going to say who it is. It's a person I don't know on Twitter, and she's a nice person, and I don't have a beef with her or anything. And I'm wondering if maybe she thought it was something more official than just me and my kids in the basement. Because when I do this stuff, I do it upright. I make programs. I did title screens. I do design. We make a T-shirt. So it really looks like it's a bigger deal than just a family of five in the basement watching movies over the course of 4th of July week. And so I'm announcing the stuff I did. Like, I showed some John Hughes movies. I showed The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles, which are really the teen movies. He did a bunch of, like, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was in the 80s, but it's not one of the teen movies. And she replied to one of my posts and said, well, are you going to show Valley Girl and Real Genius or Fast Times at Ridgemont High? And I'm like, no, the schedule's already set. She's like, well, those were directed by women, and women directed in the 80s. And I'm like, look, I'm not getting into a political debate over something I'm doing for my kids. She's like, well, not a political debate, you know. And then she starts hashtagging Year of the Woman or Woman in Film. And I'm like, first of all, A, this was just a thing that my wife and I decided to do for the kids. And I'm just sort of sharing it on social media. I'm not making a definitive list. And every single one of the three that she mentioned, there's a reason I didn't show them, and that's because, I mean, you can't show every movie that came out in the 80s. There was something like what, 1,000 movies that came out in the decade of the 1980s? So, of course, you're going to not include some of them. Now, certain ones like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I was never a fan of, and it has nothing to do with Amy Heckerling. I just don't like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And I already had teen high school movies, stuff like the John Hughes stuff, 16 Candles and The Breakfast Club. I didn't do Real Genius because I already had sort of that nerdy revenge. We did Revenge of the Nerds. That kind of cut from the same cloth. And I actually had never seen Real Genius until the 90s, until I was in college. So to me, it doesn't ring true to 80s. And Valley Girl, it just didn't make the cut. And here's why I'm taking this, springboarding it off of just some stupid little Twitter argument I had with somebody. I had to block her because she started hashtagging, and then I get people retweeting her stuff. And I'm like, seriously, I was just sharing something I did. When you are so aggressively attached to an issue, and you're seeing this a lot, particularly now with female-driven movies, female directors, female stars, I'm all for that. But you got to be careful not to eat your own. If people are supporting the cause, they don't have to support everything. This is a great example of what happened in the beginning of the year when Joss Whedon released Avengers Age of Ultron, which I thought was okay. For an Avengers movie, it was fine, but it wasn't great. But people jumped all over him because of his treatment of Scarlett Johansson's character in the movie. And I'm like, Joss Whedon is one of your biggest allies in terms of feminist filmmaking. And you're devouring him now, and you're calling him a sexist. When you have so much energy for your cause that you start shooting yourself in the foot, that's where the problem is. I now have no interest whatsoever in highlighting female directors of the 80s because this person was so obnoxious about it. Well, aren't you going to show your kids Real Genius? Well, no, because I'm showing them Revenge of the Nerds. Well, that's written, directed by men. I didn't make this playlist based on whether or not women directed these movies. And I would put films on the list because I thought they felt 80s to me, or my wife wanted to watch it. It cripples your cause in the process. It reminds me of a teacher I had in high school, and she was a big feminist, and she was a literature teacher. Whenever we had a vocabulary word, people would use it in a sentence. And anytime somebody used he was gregarious, meaning he was very easygoing and liked to talk to people at parties, she would always be like, oh, that's good. Yes, you could also say she was gregarious. I remember one of the words was libel. And somebody said, oh, he was on trial for libel, being, you know, speaking out against somebody in print. And she's like, oh, that's very good. Crickets. And I raise my hand. I go, you know, you could say she was on trial for libel. And she kind of gave me, aha, you got me look. Because if you're so obnoxious with your stuff, you just make people resent you. And then from that point on, I refuse to use he or she because I'm like, quit being so obnoxious about it. Go after something that really matters. That's something I see interesting because I'm seeing ripples of it going through movie news and this director and that director. But what about the woman? And then when there are female directors that make a movie and then people don't go see it, you're not helping the cause. Or a movie like Hot Pursuit, which was a very female-driven movie that nobody wanted to get behind because they didn't think it was a good movie. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. A couple big ones that are coming down later this year. The first one I want to hit, I know I've talked about this before, and that is Spectre. The new trailer dropped this week. It opens on November 6th.
So what's going on, James? They say you're finished.
What do you think?
I think you're just getting started.
This organization, do you know what it's called?
Its name is Spectre.
And you know who links them all?
Me. Welcome, James.
You came across me so many times, yet you never saw me.
What took you so long?
I love James Bond. I'm looking forward to this. I think this offers a little bit more of the story, but it doesn't reveal too much, which is great. You get to see some of the people in action, like Leela Sadu, and you get to see Dave Bautista's head. They're not revealing too much about whether or not Christoph Waltz is Blofeld-ish. I mean, they're using Spectre, which was created by Kevin McClory. Might as well use Blofeld as well. The only reservation I have is that these movies are getting too serious and not being the fun James Bond, and I'd like to see it loop back to a little bit more fun. These are starting to turn into the DC Cinematic Universe. That's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Southpaw and Paper Town. Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, getting ready to start the movie reviews. Let's start off with Southpaw. This isn't the biggest movie of the weekend, but it is pretty high profile. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal as an out-of-control champion boxer who sees his life fall apart when his wife dies. Then he struggles to get custody of his daughter and make a fighting comeback.
This court is aware of the tragedy your family has suffered, Mr. Hope. Nonetheless, you have chosen to demonstrate dangerous behaviors while having custody of your daughter.
Dad?
You need help, Billy. It'll be a year before your suspension is up, which means zero income.
Legal custody of the child shall remain with family services until the father can demonstrate the abilities of a responsible parent.
Please, I don't know.
I can't lose my daughter. I give you my everything.
In a lot of ways, because it's a boxing movie, it's a fighting movie, Southpaw very much reminds me of a Rocky movie. It hits all the same beats. No pun intended. The story follows very similar to what you'd see in a Rocky movie. A guy, at least one of the Rocky sequels, maybe not the first Rocky movie, but the Rocky sequels, a guy at the top of his game, gets knocked off his pedestal, has to make a comeback, has to kind of find his true self again. And then, of course, you have that big comeback fight at the end to see if he can win. It's effectively done. It's directed by Antoine Fuqua, who's done movies like Training Day, and he most recently did The Equalizer last year with Denzel Washington. He's a fantastic director. I think Antoine Fuqua does a fabulous job as a director, and he's got a real command of the storytelling process in a visual way. He has some very stark imagery, and he usually pulls some really good performances out of the people. What's a little bit different about this and some of the other stuff that Fuqua does is this is written by Kurt Sutter, and if you don't know who he is, he's the showrunner for Sons of Anarchy, and it shows. If you love Sons of Anarchy, you're going to love the bits of this movie that are very Kurt Sutter. It's very gritty. It's very grim. It's very tatted up gangster style characters. Jake Gyllenhaal, he could be part of Sons of Anarchy. He looks like he just walked right off the set. And Rachel McAdams plays his wife. And while she's a beautiful woman, it's kind of a throwaway role for her. She doesn't have a whole lot to do. But ultimately, she's kind of playing Tammy Lynn from the Ted movies, where she's this heavily accented, sort of wise, cracking wife who loves him dearly, but also doesn't take any guff from him. It has some other actors, and it has 50 Cent, which is, you know, Curtis Jackson, and he's okay. The writing's not as strong as a Rocky movie. What it doesn't have is the warm and fuzziness. There's a certain warm and fuzziness to Sylvester Stallone's Rocky character, and even though he was kind of coming from the streets, you always just kind of liked the guy because he just seemed like a nice guy. The same thing with Ralph Macchio in the original Karate Kid. In this one, Jake Gyllenhaal, they take him a little too far. Not in a bad way. Not in that he's like a bad guy. It's just he is so gritty and so, for lack of a better term, white trash that has made it. It loses a little bit of its warmer edge, and it sometimes gets a little bit too gritty for its own good. Part of it also is the character is just so stupid sometimes. I mean, he's like losing his house, he's losing his finances, he's losing his daughter, and it doesn't seem like at any point anyone seriously takes him aside and is like, you are not going to have any money left. And there's a scene where they do try that. They bring in his financial advisor, but they have a half-hearted attempt to it. But even when he's losing custody of his daughter, you would have thought that somebody at some point, like his lawyer at least, would have taken him aside and said, this is likely going to happen. Or even before this got to that point where they're saying, look, your kid is going to be taken from you if you are found doing drugs or drinking too much in front of her, or carrying a loaded weapon around. So I think there's some weak writing in it, but overall it's a boxing movie. It throws its punches and most of them land and it works. It's got great performances. Jake Gyllenhaal does a fantastic job. Forrest Whitaker as his trainer, he does a good job, but it's not a great movie. It's more for the performances. Still, I'm going to have to say that Southpaw kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move into Paper Towns. This is written by Jonathan Green, who did The Fault in Our Stars, which I hated, if you recall, from last year when I reviewed it. I did not like that movie. The best thing about it is, like, Shailene Woodley's performance in it really kind of raised the quality of the film, but the film itself and the story was, it was just sort of a young Nicholas Sparks kind of story where, I know, it glorified cancer, and I didn't like that. It was like, oh, I felt like there were going to be teenage girls leaving that movie going, I wish I had cancer so I could find true love. And this movie isn't so much, I mean, I'm not going to saddle Green with the moniker of the new Nicholas Sparks, because at least this is a little bit different. In this movie, a teenager embarks on a road trip to find the girl next door who he's fallen in love with and who has gone missing.
Can you just get your boyfriend to do it?
Ex-boyfriend. My boyfriend has been cheating on me. Revenge plot begins.
Margot always loved mysteries. Maybe she loved him so much, she became one.
She's gone.
When was the last time you saw Margot?
You were with her last night. It has to mean something.
There's something in Margot's window.
She left little clues, like breadcrumbs.
I found something. I think she's sending you a message. Come find me.
This movie is so full of teen angst, I wanted to take a shower afterwards. You could feel the tightening of the strings, and part of it is the main character is this guy who's been in love with the girl next door all his life. Well, I mean, he's in high school. He's going to be graduating in high school, but he's been in love with her since she moved in when he was like 8 or 9. And he just obsesses about her, and he idolizes her. He puts her on a pedestal. And you look at her, and you're just like, she's just a flibbertigibbet. And she has some of the most teeth-grindingly bad lines in there that are meant to sound very poetic, but just sound pretentious as all get out and just poorly written. I mean, written poorly to their lines that are supposed to sound beautifully written, but they're not very well written, and so they just sound terrible. Maybe they're just delivered really badly. And so much of this is this kid pining for her, and this, the story kind of evolves into really just this road trip with him and his friends. And his friends are cool and cute, and they have personality. But it does kind of fall into this territory of being this fantasy for a dorky teenage kid who likes the pretty girl, because that's what the main character's doing. That's what his friend is when this girl's best friend comes along for the ride. It's him just fawning over this attractive girl who wants to be more than just being attractive. And it's just, the movie feels like it's just paying service to boys that never got the girl, but it's geared at girls. I'm sure that the kids are going to like it. I'm sure that the teenage girls and the college girls are going to watch this thing and think it's great. It's not as much of a tearjerker as The Fault in Our Stars. It's not meant to be a tragedy like that movie was, a tragic romance. This is more of a coming-of-age movie, but a coming-of-age for a guy who's just a big wet napkin, in my opinion. So it didn't hate it. It had some charming moments, but overall, I just didn't like that. The main character was such, I mean, he was like dirty panties in the laundry. That was what this guy was to me. So I'm going to have to say that Paper Towns kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Pixels and Testament of Youth. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the movie reviews. Let's talk about the new film that's actually causing a big schism in movie review land, and that is Pixels. Former video game champions from the 80s are brought in to fight an alien invasion in the form of classic arcade games.
In 1982, NASA launched a time capsule into space containing examples of our life and culture in hopes of contacting extraterrestrial life.
I believe that some alien life force sent down real-life video games to attack us.
We've never faced a threat like this before.
We need video game expertise.
These guys were champions back in 82.
What's funny about this movie is I took my two oldest sons. They're 14 and 12. And this is very significant because, like I said earlier in the show, I did this 80s weekend and I brought out all these old plug-and-play video games. So we were playing a lot of Pac-Man and Galaga, Ms. Pac-Man, Mappy, Dig Dug, all these classic arcade games. Then the other thing is because they were the aliens send messages to Earth and basically dub over old episodes of TV shows. And they like had one where they had Mr. Rourke and Tattoo from Fantasy Island. And of course, the kids had finally seen a Fantasy Island episode. So they totally got it out of context. You didn't know who these people were, but my kids were really excited because they knew what it was. So it was this really well-timed coincidental movie for me to watch with my kids because we had infused ourselves with the 80s just about a month ago. One of the things that is causing the schism is there are people who are just incensed that Adam Sandler is still making movies. That's fine. I mean, the internet is full of hyperbole. I contribute to hyperbole myself quite a bit on the internet. And there are people who are just so anti-Adam Sandler. And it's not an unearned thing. I mean, he had the string of really terrible movies. Talking about stuff like Grown Ups, Jack and Jill, That's My Boy, Grown Ups 2. He had this string of movies, but if you really look at that, that really only lasted about 4 or 5 years. And the fact that these movies do generally well really upset a lot of people. But if you really want to talk Adam Sandler, look back at his whole filmography. The guy's done a lot of stuff. I think his stuff like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore and Bulletproof, that stuff's fantastic 90s comedy work. And even stuff like I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, which you look at it now, it looks very homophobic, but it was kind of progressive back in 2007 when it came out. It was on the cusp of that gay marriage debate. And while some of the humor still reeks of homophobia, it certainly treats the issue a lot better than most other movies ever did. So there's a lot to Adam Sandler and there's a lot to the movies he's made than just the last 6 or 7 years. And I think as an audience, we need to recognize that. And the same goes for Kevin James. You know, Kevin James came out with Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 this year. And that movie's not good. I thought the first one was okay, but he also did The Zookeeper. Kevin James has his fair string of terrible movies as well. But he also did some pretty cool stuff. He was in Hitch, and I pronounce him Chuck and Larry. He's done other stuff. He had the whole King of Queens show. So this guy should not be defined simply for the handful of movies he was involved in recently. If you can get past Adam Sandler and Kevin James' recent filmography, Pixels is a heck of a fun film. Now, if all you are saddled down with how much you hate Adam Sandler and Kevin James because you personally can't get past the fact that you hated the Grown Ups movies, you're going to hate this movie because their mere presence is going to annoy you. But you know what? They're perfectly appropriate for the film. And it's a fun movie. It also has some other great performances. I mean, Kevin James, he plays the president, which I think is kind of a bold choice. And it's ludicrous and stupid, but it's about video games coming and attacking the Earth. So let's not look for logic and realism in Pixels. Josh Gad is hilarious in it. He plays another one of the video game guys. He's very funny, and I don't think he gets enough credit because he's such a side character. He can't really headline a movie because he doesn't work as the lead. He works as a supporting role. There's very few things that I'll see that he's not good in. I mean, even if you didn't like it, like The Wedding Ringer, he was fun in The Wedding Ringer. Now, what's funny about this movie, it's just a big, stupid, fun adventure. It's a kid's movie. It is a movie about video games attacking. You can't take it too seriously. And it has some great effects. It has some great action sequences in it. And it really gets the games. And yeah, there's going to be some anachronisms. I remember I'm watching the movie and they have a reference to Tetris. And the whole thing is it's based on this time capsule that was sent into space in 1982. And I'm like, well, Tetris didn't come out until the late 80s. Only a geek like me is going to really care. But you know, if you've spent any time in arcades as a kid, which I did, I thought this was a big, fun movie. And my kids loved it. Here's the other thing. Peter Dinklage is amazing in this movie. He plays sort of an anti-hero. He's the bad guy of the video game guys. And of course, he joins with them to fight the aliens. But he essentially plays Billy Mitchell from King of Kong. If you've seen King of Kong, he essentially plays that character, and it's hilarious. They're having fun with this movie, and they're not taking themselves seriously, but they're still telling a story. And yeah, it goes back to more kid-centric filmmaking. It's kind of like a Power Rangers episode, but it's a lot of fun. My kids loved it. I remember seeing it in the theater. There was a massive crowd. They turned away tons of people. That can happen for crappy movie screenings. But the audience absolutely loved it. The only ire I'm seeing are people directing it at Adam Sandler. But he's also not playing just the same stock role he's played before. The biggest problem with the string of bad movies is he always was somebody who was inexplicably wealthy and always had an inexplicably hot wife. And he played that role again and again and again in these movies, and it was just lazy writing. This one, at least they gave him something different to do. That's one of the reasons I liked Blended last year. I thought it was kind of cute. So I'm going to have to say Pixels rocks. I had a lot of fun with this movie. So there.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's slow it down and talk about a more intellectual movie. Testament of Youth. A young woman sees her life of privilege crumble as World War I takes her innocence.
Be strong. Be brave. Be loyal to your homeland.
Now we're a nation at war. All the papers are saying it'll be short and fast.
Well, I can assure you it's never short and it's never fast.
Edward, my little brother, suddenly so grown up.
He's only 18.
There are boys from the town who signed up already. How will it look if I'm not among them?
He was born to make his mark on the world.
Roland, you've signed up.
I have to go. How many generations get the chance to be involved in something like this?
First of all, this is based on a book which is actually based on true accounts. It's a woman's memoirs of her experience at home and abroad. And it starts out where she's sort of, they're in this nice, very upper middle class family during the early part of the 20th century. And it's her wanting to study at Oxford and going through the struggles to be taken seriously as a woman there. And then war breaks out and her family goes to war and her fiance goes to war. And she has to deal with the real horrible realities of World War I. And they do bring up the point that a lot of people thought World War I was just they didn't think it was going to be World War I. It only became known as World War I when it escalated to the point of being this world war. But when it first happened, they thought, oh, it's just going to happen really quickly and we'll be in and we'll be out and it'll be over. And it was not the case. And in America, we have such an American-centric view of things, we forget that Europe was embroiled in this stuff for a lot longer than we were. Same thing with World War II. So this is told from the British angle. It's an interesting enough story to sort of see a reality of the world into World War I. The problems I had with it is it tries to do a lot. And that's because it's based on a book that's ultimately a big memoir of how this woman went from being a younger privileged woman to becoming a suffragette and becoming a pacifist and lecturing. This movie probably would have been served better if it were like a miniseries on the BBC. It just seems to bite off a lot in one movie, which is a bit for me. Plus, I get a little bit wearisome of people who are overly privileged in movies and are just like, oh, we have such a great life. Oh, I'm going to go to war. And, oh my God, this is war. People are getting killed. I don't know. I mean, Testament of Youth is not a bad movie. It's beautifully shot. It's well acted. It's not my cup of tea. It's really more for the Masterpiece Theater crowd. I say that a lot with movies. I said that about Mr. Holmes last week. It's a Masterpiece Theater kind of movie. Even though I sat and watched that stuff when I was a kid with my mom on PBS growing up in the 70s and 80s, it's not my thing. Maybe for the Downton Abbey crowd. I don't watch Downton Abbey. As somebody once called me, I am a lowbrow elitist. And the lowbrow elitist in me says, Testament of Youth kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I got one more review, A Murder in the Park, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr coming in for the final segment of Fat Guys at the Movies. We got one more film review to get through until we send you on your merry way. That is A Murder in the Park. After college students and an ideological professor get a death row inmate released from prison, new information comes to light that he was likely guilty after all.
To free a wrongfully convicted man 48 hours away from being executed has got to be the great dream of any reporter anywhere.
There was one problem, though. It was one big lie.
The journalism professor intentionally leaves out the most important fact of all.
They seized on the name of a guy with no evidence and concluded he was the real killer.
He tells me that a man is getting ready to die for something I did.
This case had a motive behind it bigger than the crime.
This is one of those odd films that took a while for me to warm up to. And part of it is because there's a whole setup to the movie about this guy who got convicted of this murder that happened in Chicago, and then the progression of events for somebody being convicted, and then the person was on death row, and then he was released, and you had these people trying to get him out, and the abolition of the death penalty in Illinois. So they had all this setup to do, and that's not what the movie's about. The movie is about looking at the process by which this guy was released from prison. So it really feels rushed at the beginning. I mean, that first 10 minutes, I felt like there was no context, and just they blasted through this stuff so quickly. And I'm like, well, this doesn't feel like the typical movie where there's a crime and then they set up a case against it. But the real oomph of this movie is looking at the process, A, by which these people got this guy released, and B, the process by which they got another guy in prison, and see the overreaching story of the ends not justifying the means. So once the movie got going, I was incredibly intrigued. Ultimately, the movie shows the professor, who was the do-gooder trying to get rid of the death penalty, had no scruples in doing it, had no trouble manipulating the facts and even getting an innocent man in prison just to get this through. I'm not going to get in a death penalty debate. This movie is not about whether the death penalty is a correct punishment. This movie is about looking at the situation and saying, if you believe it's not, it still does not justify the process by which you got rid of it. The ends do not justify the means. And this is a horrifying movie to show what people with no scruples will do to get their agenda passed, and how many people they manipulate along the way. And it also shows the idiocy of people trying to do good, but not actually getting the full picture. Because it shows these college students who take a journalism course, which first of all, as a journalist, your job as a journalist is to report and to uncover the truth. It is not to go in with an agenda. And I know a lot of journalists out there who have an agenda and pursue it vigorously. But that's not what journalism's about. Journalism's about reporting and getting to the truth, not trying to make a name for yourself. This reminds me of a story, and it has nothing to do with this level of crime, but there was a whole story about this communication method that heavily handicapped people would do called facilitated communication. And what it had, you had these people who wanted to do good, but they also wanted to be so significant that they let their own, essentially their own subconscious, take over and convict people of child molestation because it was what in their minds they were thinking was happening to these heavily handicapped kids. And so the communication was actually coming from the facilitators, not from the actual quote unquote victims. And look that up. Look up facilitated communication sometime. That it's a whole big story, but it shows how the problem with people who are what you call do-gooders is they're always looking for the thing to do good with, and then they ignore all the evil that surrounds them. And this case that was manufactured against this guy who ended up in prison after the real killer was let out is extremely evil and horrible and terrible. And it's very eye-opening because this stuff happens. And this stuff happens on the academic level, and this stuff happens on the professional journalistic level. This is a fascinating movie because they go back and they spell out how this actually took place and how it could take place within this context. And it's why whenever somebody is offering devil's advocate side, it may very well be the devil that's advocating that. In the end, A Murder in the Park kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. If, of course, you have followed anything, you heard that Ant-Man bombed last weekend, right? It didn't do well. It's one of the worst Marvel openings ever. In fact, if you take into account 3D prices and inflation, it is the worst. The reality is, Ant-Man did just fine. Ant-Man made just under $58 million at the box office last week. Now, that's low. It's certainly low compared to the Iron Man movies, which they started off with $90 million. And it's certainly low for Avengers. The first one made over $200 million. The second one almost made $200 million its first weekend. It's amazing how many people declare it a bomb. And it's not. First of all, it's only like less than $3 million away from the $60 million magic number of what people were predicting. I mean, it's like 5% less. It is almost statistically insignificant from $60 million. First of all, I think Ant-Man's going to have pretty decent legs because good word of mouth. It's not going to play like a Marvel sequel. A lot of people are saying, oh, maybe it's going to play like all the movies that came out after the first Avengers. Well, it's going to play a little bit more like an original movie because it is that. Yeah, it's in this cinematic universe, but it's not a sequel to anything. It's a brand new character with a cast. And the biggest name in the cast was Michael Douglas, and he's the only one who's ever been able to open a movie just by name, and that hasn't been for a couple decades. So Ant-Man, with making almost $60 million in a very crowded marketplace where you got Jurassic World and you're going up against Minions and Inside Out and Terminator. Well, that Terminator wasn't a problem. It's going up against some big movies right now. It wasn't in this vacuum, which is what happened last year with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think as much as I love Guardians of the Galaxy, if Guardians of the Galaxy Day and Date opened this weekend as it did instead of Ant-Man, it would have suffered a little bit because part of what made Guardians of the Galaxy such a huge hit wasn't just it was an awesome movie, but it was because all the other movies surrounding it were duds. So Ant-Man's doing just fine. And Trainwreck came in third. It made just over $30 million. Did okay. I mean, that's fine. I didn't like it. But, I mean, still, what's funny is it's right there. It's not a huge hit. It's not at the level of massive comedies like even like The Hangover or something like that. I think it's probably going to have decent legs because it doesn't have too much competition. And then, of course, Minions did almost $50 million, which is a huge drop from last weekend, but that's to be expected, being that sequel-ish kind of movie. This week, I'm going to predict $50 million for Pixels. I've seen predictions as low as 30, in the low 30s for Pixels. I think it's going to do well because I think a lot of people are saying, oh, just the general Adam Sandler fanboy, that market is depleting. It is, and I don't know if like people my age, you know, remembering the 80s as a fun time and playing video games in the arcades, I don't know if that's going to drive it to success, but I'll tell you what is going to. It's going to be the kids. They are heavily, heavily promoting this in the kids' networks, in the stuff that goes to children. This is a much bigger family movie than any of the other Adam Sandler films, even though grown-ups arguably you can show to kids. Pixels is 100% kids movie all the way. And they're saying, hey, by the director of Harry Potter. I mean, because Chris Columbus directed. People forget that. So I think it's going to do pretty well. And I think Ant-Man's going to hold pretty nicely in the low 30s. And I'm assuming that Paper Towns is going to do well because there hasn't been something like this for a while. So sort of that teen girl audience, the Fault in Our Stars crowd is going to come out for this movie. You're You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Very thin this week. We have a couple movies that are out. You've got What We Do in the Shadows, which is a very funny movie. I covered this on the show a couple months ago. And it's from New Zealand, and it's a mockumentary about vampires living in modern New Zealand. Very funny, starring Jemaine Clement, who, of course, some people will recognize for stuff like Flight of the Conchords, and also he was most recognizable, probably, for Men in Black 3. There's also Kung Fu Killer, which is an interesting kung fu movie made for fans of kung fu movies because it takes all these famous martial arts stars from China and just crams them into this giant mega meta kung fu movie. Worth checking out, even if you're not a huge fan. And then Robot Chicken Season 7. This is, of course, Seth Green's stop-motion animated goofy sketch comedy show. It's a niche audience, but it's very funny for what it is. Season 7 is now on DVD. And that is it for the week. I need to go. And when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, and Vacation. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.